Joining me now on the phone is a good personal friend of mine, as well as a renowned political expert when it comes to Iowa politics, Dennis Goldford. He's professor of political science at Drake University, the great Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa. Dennis, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Yo, it's always a pleasure for you, Rick.
Can you tell me, can Iowans really wrap their heads around with the size of this Democratic field that confronts them on a daily basis?
No, it's been frustrating for Iowa Democrats the way it has for Democrats around the nation. I mean, there are clearly some people who are, to put it politely, are highly unlikely to get the nomination who are running. But the field is still pretty much in flux. If you look at the people that have been in Iowa most consistently, I mean, you have to start with John Delaney, the former congressman from Maryland, who basically started campaigning and actually went up on TV here in Iowa shortly after President Trump's inauguration in 2017. So he's been at it for quite some time. But I think that the size of this field reflects two things about our political environment. One speaks well for the Democrats, one speaks poorly for the Democrats. And the good side for the Democrats is that, public opinion to the contrary, politicians tend to be rational actors. And they're not going to jump in and go through all the time and money and energy all this requires unless they really think they have an opportunity to win. So you've got a tremendous number of Democrats that believe that they really do have a chance to defeat an incumbent president. So that's in their favor. Whether that works out or not, this, of course, remains to be seen. But the negative side of that is that the number of Democrats in the field indicates that the Democrats have not completed their generational shift. In other words, if you think of last time, the two primary candidates, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, were well past eligibility for Social Security. And Republicans, while they had some older candidates like Mr. Trump or Jeb Bush, you know, they had candidates in their 40s and 50s, more or less. Ted Cruz, Bobby Jindal, Marco Rubio, people like that. So the Democrats hadn't started their generational shift, and that's what we're seeing now to a great extent as the Democrats try to figure out who they are and what they represent in this 21st century time period.
Well, and of course, you're seeing Trump and Republicans in congressional races around the country using, AOC and Democratic Socialist as a label of that's what the new millennial Democrat represents.
Well, that's true, but you've had Republicans since the New Deal arguing that Democrats are socialists. So that's an old trope. And what we're seeing now, and of course it has a racial and an ethnic tinge to it, what the Republicans want to do is make this an argument over who's a real American and who's not. And, the Democrats claim to be more inclusive, that everybody's an American, no matter what your religious or racial or ethnic background or even your political orientation, whereas the Republicans, at least those who are more in line with Trump supporters, want to argue, no, only certain people count as American. Everybody else does not count as really truly American in the full sense of the term. That's why this gets very nasty, because it's a question of who's a member of the American citizen community.
Yeah, and it speaks to, again, who we are as a country.
Right. Right. And, there's an argument. Remember that, I'm often asked, can a third party candidate win? And I always say no, because the last time a third party actually got somewhere was in the 1850s when the Republican Party, the new Republican Party, displaced the Whigs. So since the 1850s, our political competition has been Republicans versus Democrats. Third party candidates can sometimes have success at the state level, but they haven't had success at the national level. Well, what happened with the Trump movement was basically a hostile takeover of the Republican Party. And the Trump folks represent, in a sense, the George Wallace, Pat Buchanan sort of conservative populist side of the country. And they are in the ascendancy with Mr. Trump. He claims to be their tribune. He claims to represent them. And this is why you see more of an edge and an anger to our politics now.
We're speaking with Dennis Goldford. He's professor of political science at Drake University in Des Moines. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, joined on the phone by Dennis Goldford, professor of political science at Drake University in Des Moines. We're talking about Iowa and the presidential, Democratic presidential field. And, you know, Dennis, I'm kind of curious, as we were talking about kind of that Democratic voters eyeing that kind of generational shift, you know, last time around, it was the kind of establishment wing of Hillary Clinton and the insurgents of Bernie Sanders. And now it seems like Sanders has been eclipsed by other Democrats. And I'm very curious where he fits into the picture in the presidential race right now. Just, I mean, he's obviously a known name, but it seems like others have kind of assumed the mantle of what he was talking about in his campaign against Hillary Clinton.
I think you're right. Sanders still has a reservoir of support among some Democrats here, but, you know, quite often, you know, historically we've had people run for the presidency unsuccessfully a couple of times and then never getting the nomination, or sometimes getting it after a couple of unsuccessful attempts. You know, candidates have their messages, but the environment sometimes changes. I mean, if you listen to Bernie Sanders, Bernie is Bernie. What you see is what you get, and you could just rerun tapes of speeches from 2016 and 2015, that caucus cycle and the general election cycle. And it's the same kind of argument. And you do have some younger candidates portraying or seizing upon some of his themes. But again, as we said, the Democrats are trying to figure out whether there's a real conflict or whether there's a way to find some balance between a more centrist liberalism and a more progressive liberalism. And as you said, you know, the AOCs and people like that tend to be more the younger set. They're the more progressive liberalism, whereas Joe Biden tries to represent that more centrist liberalism, and the Democrats are still having this conflict to figure out who they are and who should represent them in that regard.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of an interesting study, as you know, even from the issue as we saw of impeachment and Nancy Pelosi trying to, you know, keep the brakes on that kind of a movement versus those, the, you know, I guess over 90 Democrats that voted on that resolution, of just trying to keep control of things. And I guess it really comes down to, are people ready to kind of take that leap into a more progressive Democratic posture? It's, as you said, you mentioned Joe Biden, and then you've got, you know, South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who his message is, well, you know, we can't return to normal because Trump proved there is no more normal. So, you know, we've got to move forward. And it's, what is that forward going to look like?
Well, you know, the conventional wisdom for the longest time in presidential politics is that you've got to activate your most committed, most ideologically oriented supporters to get the nomination, but then you try to move to the center to pick up undecideds and independents and people like that to assemble a national electoral coalition that can put you over the top. But the argument, at least for a cycle or two now, especially on the Republican side, has been that there are no more, there's no center anymore.
Right.
That elections are about activating the base. You know, the president, for good or for ill, has governed not as president of the country. He's governed as president of his base. And he's doubling down on that. And you have some Democrats who basically want to make the same mirror image argument, that the way to win the election is to activate that Democratic base, particularly single women, young people, and racial and sexual minorities. Whereas the older, more establishment Democrat says, no, you can't get so wild on the fringes that you scare away the people in the center you need. So that's the experiment, if you will, that's going on for us to see what's going to happen.
So where are the independent voters?
Well, again, you know, we always talk a lot about independent voters, but in fact, studies show that about a third of independents actually vote like Republicans, but they just don't call themselves Republicans. And another third actually vote like Democrats, but don't call themselves Democrats. Only about a third of independents, so maybe 10, 12% of the voting public, actually are pure independents. And in fact, they tend to vote the least often and have the least interest in politics and least knowledge of politics. So can I think for the Democrats, the question is, can you get, say, those college-educated suburban Republicans who are not comfortable with the president, can you get them to vote for you or at least get them not to vote for the president? Or are you going to come up with a candidate who scares them so much that they're going to hold their nose and vote for a candidate they may not actually prefer?
Sometimes it comes down to the lesser of two evils. And when you talk to voters, that's what they always, you know, tend to say.
Well, you know, I oftentimes tell college students who are young and idealistic and want to think of the perfection that, you know, we're always confronted by the evil of two lessers, if you will. You know, politics is always about half a loaf. It always has been. You know, Ronald Reagan famously said, I can't remember the precise number, but I think he said something like, somebody that votes with me 80% of the time is not my enemy. But for the idealists and the perfectionists, if you're not with me 100% of the time, you are my enemy. And the younger you are, you're more idealistic like that, and you're less prone to compromise. And this is where Biden is running into trouble because, you know, he's that old school, you got to compromise and work with the other side. And the younger candidates on the Democratic side are just, you know, tempers flashing, and they're so outraged in their view of what's going on politically that they don't want to compromise. They want a pure candidate.
And I mean, and you hear it from the on the far right, on the conservative side, that kind of that purity of viewpoint.
Oh, sure. I mean, you've got an argument now among Republicans, at least among conservatives, that the old sort of free market interventionist or active foreign policy and social conservative Republican coalition, they want to claim that doesn't exist anymore, that's outdated. They want to pay more attention to populist themes like how the free market really disadvantages working Americans. And they want to redefine conservatism itself. And so that's, you know, Paul Ryan was an example of this older view of what conservatism is. But then you got a Tucker Carlson who has a very different view of what conservatism is, and that's the Republican argument on their side.
A lot to stay tuned for as the debates move ahead, as the candidates move ahead. And Dennis, I know we'll be talking to you again. Thanks so much for joining me this morning.
It's always a pleasure, Rick. Take care.
That's Dennis Goldford, professor of political science at Drake University in Des Moines.